We got a white hot intro for you today. I want to talk about the criticism of athletes and where that is headed, because I think we've seen a change. And Danny Cannell, college football, a ton of stuff from him, including the USC job. And we have life advice. Enjoy your Friday. It's the Ryan Russillo podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available. And listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 and older and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Crown Royal. This NBA season, Crown Royal is celebrating the loyal fans that show up for every tip-off. I love every tip-off. I love every one of them. And people ask me, hey, are you tipping off tonight? Because they know that's code for, are the games on? And I'll say, yeah, come on over. Bring your kids. I don't care about the audio feed. You can walk in front of the television. Because this time of year, the second half of the NBA, it's about family. And that's one of my favorite things about my life. Crown Royal believes if you live generously, life will treat you royally. Visit crownroyal.com to get ready for tip-off. Please drink responsibly. For today's open, I've been thinking about this topic and kind of where this is. I'm just going to be kind of working this out loud here. I've been thinking about this now for a while because I think in the last couple of years, things have changed. There's been a lot of things in the last 2 years that have changed, and specifically the way we talk about certain subjects. And specific to what I do, I'm talking about sports basically every day for a living for almost two decades now. I've noticed that how we criticize athletes, that is being questioned maybe more now than ever. Like, I think there's a pushback to certain criticism that there never was when I was younger. I mean, if you just wanted to crush a guy, you could crush a guy. But now if you do it on social media, and I also think this is a big part of it too, is that I was talking with a reporter about this. In the past, if you had it out for somebody, you could just trash them and they were kind of at your mercy. And that was a very different dynamic between the relationship between media and then subject. And in this case, for the most part, it's almost always athletes, except for coaches, GMs, right? But for the most part, it is athletes. Now, when the athlete previously was powerless, now the athlete could just go right back at you. And what I've noticed, I think we would all agree, is that there is this rush to either defend the player from the criticism or go at the reporter. Like, just straight up destroying an athlete now is not cool. And you are going to get blowback. And then the athlete can go back at you. And let's face it, nobody has Russillo jerseys on at home, okay? Nobody's got a Colin Cowherd tank top, although I did think he at some point he had a line of those. But you get the point. Like, none of these people are rooting for us as emotionally as they are rooting for their favorite athlete. So I have noticed a shift in how critical we can be about certain people. Now, if we keep it as a right now in a news item, you can look at Carmelo Anthony, who, you know, I've always really liked. I like him as a guy. I like him as a player. He probably feels overrated because he was kind of marketed as if he lived in that tier one neighborhood of stars and he wasn't those guys. If you go through all the playoff losses, I've said this numerous times, almost every time he lost in playoffs, he lost to a team that was better than him, except for maybe one time and then maybe other time where the teams were even. But I think there's like five or six other playoff exits where, like, yeah, that other team was just better than him. All right. I like Melo. But he said recently not having a ring keeps him up at night. He also said in 2016 that if he had three gold medals, that would be better than an NBA championship. And here's what I can guarantee you. He is well positioned now with the Lakers to win a ring. I don't think him winning a ring now turns it all into like, hey, were we wrong about Melo? I mean, come on, let's not be idiots about this. But I don't think Carmelo Anthony, after he would win potentially a championship next year with the Lakers, would be like, you know what, I still like those three gold medals. All right. Because the people that are dismissive of the ultimate accomplishment, a championship in their respective sport, the only people that are diminishing the value of that are the guys that never done it, right? Russell Westbrook got into with Stephen A. Smith earlier this season after Stephen A. criticized him on First Take. I thought Stephen A.'s criticisms were fair. Russell Westbrook, though, put together a really smart, educated response. I'm going to get to that a little bit later. But we've seen this at times where athletes that did not accomplish. And it really is for the NBA star and quarterback. Those are the two things we seem to care the most about, that void of a championship. And if a guy ends up finishing up a really great 15-year career and then it's like, ah, you know, look, it's not the end of the world. Like, I did some great things in my community. I did this. I started a family and all these things. You're like, yeah, that's cool. Because nobody in your city's talk show base, nobody was on the air being like, this guy's just a great guy, though. He's a great guy, even though we can't get out of the playoffs. So you get the point. But I do think that there is this bit of shift, and I don't know where it's going. And that's, I think, it's an unanswerable question right now. I wonder where this is all going because there's been so much support of the athlete. I'm going to use an example that's completely outside of my comfort zone in tennis, and that's Naomi Osaka. I would like to think that I'm not a jerk. I would look at her story and go, man, if she's struggling this way, and she's just withdrawn from all these tournaments because she just can't take it. Okay, she needs to do the best thing for her. But I will openly admit there's part of me that would go, okay, but what if she just keeps withdrawing all the time? Like, does that mean that I would have to defend her? Again, if I were a tennis analyst on TV, that was my thing, would I have to like stay married to that the whole time? Would I have to like defend her forever because I defended her in the beginning? I mean, this is a really delicate thing because you're talking about somebody's mental health. And look, I don't know her. Okay. I don't know her. I don't cover the sport, all that. But I think that there's two sides of that where one side is more supportive, but there's also another side. Be like, okay, but what if? What if this keeps happening all the time? Does it mean that she's always right and that I would always have to defend her? And so when I started thinking about the Osaka situation, I then, you know, just finished up the new Netflix doc about Marty Fish. Marty Fish is somebody we've been friendly with over the years. He's been great. He's been greater to me than I've been to him. He's invited me to stuff and I just don't golf. But he's a really good guy and we have a couple mutual friends. And I sent him a text after I watched the doc because it's unbelievable. Here's somebody who was supposed to be the next big American tennis player. Roddick ends up surpassing him. Marty Fish completely revamps his workouts. Starts winning tournaments. He's the next American hope. He's facing Federer in a slam. And he withdraws because he's been dealing with all of this stuff, this anxiety where his heart is racing. I think one night he woke up in the middle of the night and his heart rate was over 200 beats per minute. I mean, just insane. And he couldn't figure out what's going on inside of him. And he's winning some matches and he has to face Federer and he's freaking out about it. And his wife's like, you know, you don't have to play. And he's like, what do you mean I don't have to play? If I were a tennis analyst at that time, when that happened, without, of course, knowing any of the stuff that Marty Fish is struggling with, then I just would have been like, well, you know, I don't know what I would have been like on TV, but I probably would have been like, look, you got to answer the bell. You know, this is what you do. This is what you signed up for. This is why you went through and trained your entire life and went to these schools and these camps and all of this. Like everything is for this moment. Even if you don't think you're going to, you got to go out there and do this. And now armed with more information, years later, watching the documentary, I'm like, man, you know, would I have been like retroactively criticized for being critical of somebody that I didn't know anything about? So the Marty Fish doc, and again, it's not like I'm talking about Osaka all the time, but you get the point. Like you go, hey, you know, maybe there's some caution here. But now, as it relates to the sports that I talk about, I think we've seen the Kwame Brown example is a really good kind of, I don't know if it's a tipping point or if it's a line in the timeline of how people talk about other public figures in sports. But Kwame Brown is a bust. All right. He is. He just is. He's the number one overall pick. Jordan took him for the Wizards straight out of high school when they were still doing that. We're going to start doing it again here soon. It didn't work out. But then Kwame Brown, like, went at dudes. He was going at everybody. We were seeing the videos and, like, I actually think dudes got a little scared of him at that time. But the way we all understand the definition of bust, he is that. You know, he had a long career. And yet, I don't think anybody would say, hey, that worked out to the expectations that you have for somebody like that. And, you know, then it became kind of this public push. And again, it was on social media where it then became like, hey, who are you to criticize Kwame Brown? Man played 13, 14 years, made $63 million. It's not his fault. He was taken number one. And it was weird because I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, is this how it's going to be in a few years? Like, are we ever going to get to that point where we start kind of rationalizing people that don't live up to the sports expectations that we have of them, that now we're going to start looking at these other things and being like, hey, $63 million, you know, played over a decade, wasn't his fault, he was number one. Like, is that what the future of this will be? Will we be so protective? Will we be so sensitive to potential criticism that you could have guys that do what I do for a living or all the different people on different television shows start talking about athletes this way to avoid seeming unfair or too critical? You know, like I said, I don't love spending my entire professional life talking about people that are better at things than I am. I guess the counterpoint to that could be, hey, at least I'm getting paid for it. I know, as I've said numerous times, I never played a game that anyone ever cared about. All right. I'd like to think after almost 20 years in the business, on the air since 02, 03, and I don't know how many thousands of hours of watching these games and all the years of watching games going back to like 7 years old, that I hope I picked up a few things. I'd like to think that some of this comes from some wealth of information through observation of decades and reading and all the pages that have put together. And like, hey, if I'm going to be critical of somebody, I'd like to think that there's some foundation of knowledge or understanding of what it is that I'm watching, because that would be really frustrating if I just didn't know anything after all this time. And I know that there's always going to be a guy that will say, like, who are you to criticize anyone you never played? Look, I just told you I never played. But like, who are you, guy part-time at Cumbies with 100,000 political tweets? Like, where is your career going that will lead to potential elected official one day? So we all talk about stuff, whether for our jobs or in our free time, we all talk about stuff that is probably not our profession. I want to get to Russell Westbrook's comments after Stephen A. Smith. Now, Stephen A. was like, look, the triple-doubles don't mean anything. He goes, you can't win. All right, can't win. There we go again. Can't win. Triple-doubles don't mean anything. I have been critical of Russell Westbrook because I just think there are times that he makes monumental mistakes at the ends of games, especially with some of the defensive freelancing. Lakers fans, you'll get to see it firsthand. Enjoy, because I don't think that's ever going to change. Now, it sounds like I'm being mean and being critical. Now, Russell Westbrook said in response to Stephen A., and it was a really thoughtful, smart response, and I'll paraphrase it a little bit, but he's like, look, I'm an NBA champion just by making it to the NBA. Okay. He said, my legacy is not based on what I do on this court. Okay. And he's done a ton for communities. He's done a ton for underserved communities. These are all facts. He's done some amazing stuff, and he points those things out. But for what we do, are we ever going to be to the point where somebody's arguing Russell Westbrook on a TV show, and they're like, you know, look, he made a mistake in the playoffs. You know, that's the cost him game five. It's Lakers are down 3-2. Is somebody then supposed to go, do you understand what this man has done for his community? I can't imagine that that's ever going to happen. And I can't imagine that any of you would want it to get to that point, because that's not really what the job is for me. And it's not really what the job is for any athlete that's trying to accomplish the ultimate goal. Like, think about it in your own life. Like, think if you, and I mean, I know, you know, plenty of people listen to this podcast. If you're a guy who runs a sales team, right? And there's 10 people on it. Doug's in 10th place all the time. You know, you're setting sales markers that you want people to get to. Doug never hits them. Would you have a 6-month review with Doug where you're like, you know, look, I know you're last literally all the time. You're the worst salesperson we have on the staff, but you're a hell of a dad. You're a hell of a dad. So that's good enough for me. Now, it depends on what you're pushing here. But for the most part, you know, if you ran that sales team, Doug's going to have some tough days ahead if he's always last. Look, it happens for me in my business. You think if I were at ESPN for a couple years, you go, hey, you know, he's just a solid guy. You get to know him as Russillo. Can't pull a number to save his life, and his billing's last of any radio show, but I just like him. Although I'd argue maybe some decisions are made that way. If you do what I do long enough, at some point you're going to have to pull a number, get an audience, and pay the bills. And nobody would say, you know, no one listens. We lose money on the deal, but he does a lot for his sisters. Because none of you give a shit about that. It's nice if I did. It's nice if all of these athletes were at peace because of the things that they do outside. Think of it this way. If you're a college football fan and your team came in third in the division, do you care about graduation rights? Do you really? It's nice. It's nice. Like, imagine talking about David Shaw and you're on a college football show and somebody goes, is Stanford regressing? You're like, I don't know. But have you seen the team's GPA? We can pretend all of these things matter. And yes, they do. So I'm not being dismissive. But for the rules, as I like to reference all the time, these are the rules. For the rules
for what we do when they play and reach certain levels or don't, and for what we do on the other side and talk about these guys. As much as I've seen it change and this slight shift, I don't think in 5 years we're going to be so supportive of all the stuff that has nothing to do with results of games that the criticism is going to become overhauled. This episode is supported by State Farm. So look, a little rock hit your dude's windshield on the highway. And at first you're like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it's just a little mark. Nope. Now by the end of the ride, it's a big crack. And it'd been a while. So I check out the State Farm app. I go, hey, this is what happened. And the funny thing is I was like, do I want to go app first or do I call? Old school guy, probably should call. It's like, let's check out the app. Not only did it take a minute to get done, they set up the glass replacement. They told me the estimate ahead of time, said, you want to go ahead with it? And I was like, now I understand. It's all in front of me, all done. I don't even have to talk to anybody. That's how efficient the insurance game has become. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, just like I did, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to somebody. The app was so good, I didn't even need to do that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. This episode is brought to you by Crown Royal. This NBA season, Crown Royal is celebrating the loyal fans that show up for every tip-off. I love every tip-off. I love every one of them. And people ask me, hey, are you tipping off tonight? Because they know that's code for, are the games on? And I'll say, yeah, come on over. Bring your kids. I don't care about the audio feed. You can walk in front of the television. Because this time of year, the second half of the NBA, it's about family. And that's one of my favorite things about my life. Crown Royal believes if you live generously, life will treat you royally. Visit crownroyal.com to get ready for tip-off. Please drink responsibly. Danny Cannell, former partner, now with CBS, and also doing, the ESPNU morning show again, correct?
Yeah, me and Dusty Dvorak, 7 to 10 a.m., Channel 84. New partner, man. I'm rolling through these partners, man. Like,
what's up with you?
I don't know. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm the jinx. Like, maybe I should just avoid people like the plague. It's something. I'm rolling through them, though. But Dusty's a good dude. He's a good dude. We're having fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed coming on. Last Friday, I think came on. And that's a great way place to start, because you're like, hey, Ohio State, Oregon. And you're like, well, look, you know, Ohio State's at home. Oregon didn't look great in their opener. I'm not sure what to make of Anthony Brown. I watched him for all those years at BC. They're missing Kayvon Thibodeau. Justin Flo, who's another five-star front guy who's out now out for the season. So I don't know what's going to happen with Kayvon. And then they go to Ohio State. How about this number? There's been only one top five team to lose at home versus a non-conference. Now, granted, Oregon's a good team. Only one team has done it in the last 10 years, and Ohio State's done it twice. Now, the other time was 17 against a really good Oklahoma team. So that sounds way worse than it is when it's like, hey, you're actually losing some good teams. I think a couple things stood out. Take it wherever you want to go. The physicality, Ohio State trying to figure out this defense. And Brown, you know, he's a big dude. I think he was pretty good throughout. Verdell was really good. I love him at running back. I think he got maybe a little bit more rattled there towards the end. But I think the bigger issue is Ohio State puts up 612 yards on the ground and they lose that game because of the defense right now.
Yeah, that was the surprise to me. I mean, there was a couple surprises. One, if you would have said Thibodeau's not playing, I would have said no chance. Like, they're done. And then he's out there, you know, cheering from the sidelines, not taking the field. And you're like, whoa, this is happening without him. It felt similar. And I think there's some backlash coming too. Remember the LSU Mississippi State game last year and Bo Pelini refused to make any adjustments, and they, you know, Mississippi State's throwing all over and you're like, oh, Mike Leach is going to tear apart the SEC. And then you go back and watch the tape and you're like, oh, wait a second. Bo Pelini just sat in the same defense all day and didn't make any adjustments. It feels like that's what's been happening at Ohio State with Kerry Coombs running the defense, and they're playing a ton of cover three and a ton of man. And not a lot. So that's basically, it's a single high safety look. And the variation off is they're running man underneath with a single safety, or they're just playing cover three zone and they're mixing it up a little bit. But Joe Moorhead was on it. He's watched them all last year. And there's a part of me that probably is thinking Joe Moorhead during that game is like, oh my gosh, they're not going to make any more adjustments. They're not going to throw us any looks. They kept running into the boundary and we're just gashing them. And you saw no response from Ohio State, which is why I think Ryan Day has alluded today to some of the, you know, staff adjustments maybe taking place, and maybe we'll find out more information about that. But last year, Ohio State had an excuse. I was like, oh, COVID, short offseason, no spring, new defensive coordinator. You don't have time to implement a lot of strategy, a lot of new looks, time to mix it up so you can disguise. But you had a whole offseason this year, and you went out there and did the same thing that you did all last year that everybody kind of gave you a pass for. I was like, well, they're getting torched because they're just very basic. Well, they were basic once again this year, and I think they have to make massive changes. And I think the other thing that's dramatically missing is there's not a Bosa brother. There's not a Chase Young. There's not a game changer on the defensive line that can really wreak havoc on, you know, an opponent. And credit to the Ducks, man. This shouldn't be that much of a surprise, though. Mario Cristobal, offensive line coach, you know, offensive line mentality, physical. Good for him, man. Huge win for the Pac-12.
Yeah, I want to expand it out to the Pac-12. I'll stay with it with Ohio State a little bit more. It's funny, though, too, when you think about that LSU game. Can you remember the Mississippi State quarterback from that game?
Yeah, it was KJ Costello, right?
Yeah, 623 yards, Heisman front runner, maybe a first rounder, benched later that season, undrafted, was waived by the Chargers in August. That was quite a run for KJ Costello.
I had some fun tweeting during that game. I'm just gonna say.
No, I know. We'll get to some of your tweets based on UCLA a little bit later. Yeah. Kerry Coombs, the D coordinator, you mentioned him. He's never been a coordinator before last year. And that single high safety thing that they has talked about, like, this is what we want. And now, look, I don't know what's fair or not. I don't pretend to understand the defensive schemes the way you would see them. At some point, you're going to have a part of your team that isn't up to the standard, right? I don't care who you are. Maybe Clemson will struggle on offense. I don't really think that's going to happen this year because I like DJ. But you get the point. And so now Day has to, like, answer for, hey, are you going to fire this guy? Are you going to reshuffle your staffing, even though there's not a lot of experience with this staff of guys actually calling plays? Do you think, can you tell already enough? Because, you know, the stats for this year, I don't want to hear about. I mean, they played a really good Oregon team and a Minnesota team that's not a slouch. The stats are going to get better their next couple of games before they get back in a Big Ten play. But can you see a scheme that doesn't match personnel? Like, do you see that where maybe it's Oregon running plays where it felt like that guy could sit down in the middle of whatever the coverage is in front of the safety, and that throw was there for him all the time until they kind of took it away from him? At that point, felt a little too late. I'm curious, you know, through the vision of the way you see the game, do you see these happening where you're like, hey, look, you can play the single high safety, but this is not working?
It's been done before. I mean, the Legion of Boom in Seattle, they were an unbelievable cover three team, right? I mean, that's what Richard Sherman gets trolled by every defensive back in the country, you know, that wants to say they're as good as him and say, well, yeah, I could have played in that cover three because it's pretty simplistic. You have help with the safety over the top. You're in zone. You don't have to chase the best receivers across the middle. So it can be done. But I do think the missing piece up front, like, it's, you got to have pressure up front to really impose this, you know, to try to shut down the run attack. I mean, they got pushed around up front. And the thing about it, cover three is there's a, you know, a single high safety, whether it's the free safety or the strong safety, and you can mix them, you can match, but it's supposed to be a good defense against the run. Like, you're getting an extra guy up in the box and you have three deep, the safety and the two corners have the thirds across the back, but you have more run support. That to me is what should be concerning, is that you couldn't get off the field running that defense. You couldn't stop the run doing that. So that to me is the bigger problem. I think the personnel, they look at the recruiting rankings, but, you know, like, there was a lot expected of Jack Sawyer, a true freshman, but for him to come in and, you know, he's been all right. Haskell Garrett's been okay, but they just have not had, again, that Bosa brother type player, the Chase Young impact player. And when we talk about the championship teams, what do we talk about? When we look at Georgia, defensive front, right? I mean, that's always the SEC difference, right? And Clemson, of course, has some dudes up there too. It's the defensive line play. And for me, that is a part of the issue. And if they're not wreaking havoc, it is very easy to start picking apart a simplistic, you know, single high safety look every time, whether it's in the run game or the pass game. I mean, most passing concepts are built off, all right, if there's one safety, single high safety, I'm going to work this side of the field. If there's two safeties, I'm working this side of the field. And if you are getting majority of single high safety, you kind of know which side you're working already. And then you can work mirrored routes because you can work either side. You start taking your pick. So I think it's a problem for Ohio State. Like, I think they're going to have to look at the personnel, say, we are not getting the game-changing, like wreaking havoc type of play up front where we need to start bringing pressure. We need to start bringing, you know, safeties up, bringing, you know, and bringing backers, bringing blitz, bringing pressure, something apart from what they were doing in that game. Because it's just not working. This Minnesota was running the ball all over them too before Ibrahim, you know, got hurt as well. I mean, he was torching them too. So it wasn't like, oh, this is, you know, just Oregon. They were getting shredded by them too.
Oregon's the most talented team in the Pac-12. The recruiting rankings would back it up. I think that's what everybody kind of expected here, but we also expected the other team to be USC. We can get to UCLA here in a moment here. I think overall, if you look at the depth of the Pac-12, it's been a bad start. I mean, the Pac-12 North performance in the first week, you're like, what the hell is going on here? And then last week, you know, preseason ranked teams in Utah, you know, BYU beat them up. Washington, Michigan, it wasn't even close. You would have thought Washington looked like a group of five team with the way they matched against the Wolverines, who we still probably are not 100% sure about. And then you have the SC part of this. All right. You know, it's crazy to think Clay Helton, this was his seventh season. You know, he even had an interim head coach at moment there too. Like, I live out here, no one liked him as the head coach. They like him as the guy. That's fine. He's a nice guy. And now the pieces are coming out. He wanted to be everybody's friend. There's no accountability, all this different stuff. All the alums were like over him for a couple years. How good do you think this job is now?
You know, it's funny because I was talking about it on my morning show and was kicking it around, was like, it's not what it used to be. You know, I think there's some similar, I mean, Florida State had a rude awakening when the job's open, they move on from Willie Taggart, and you have some delusional fans who are like, oh, go get Bob Stoops or go get whoever you can get. You know, maybe we should bring in Urban Meyer. Like, who cares if he coached at Florida? And I'm thinking, wait a second, this isn't the program that it was a decade ago. Like, this is a massive rebuild. But, and I kind of had that feeling about USC. But then, yeah, it was funny. I was talking to Rick Neuheisel, who, you know, played at UCLA, coached at UCLA, and he was big on, no, it's a top job in the country. It's the best country. You could build Alabama West if you do it right. And you start thinking about it, you're like, all right, you're the anchor in California. If you can just get back to owning the state, that is a talent-rich state, right? You've got talent all over the place. Yes, you'd have to go against UCLA, but they've never really been able to overtake USC. Yes, you'd have to go against Oregon, but at least you can sell them on, hey, you can stay closer to home in your backyard. Maybe you can dip into Texas. It still does have a lot of attractive features to it. You get to live in LA. And then I think maybe the most attractive thing about it, you got to beat Oregon. Like, who else, you know, and I know Chip's doing a great job, but right now, like, you should be able to get this thing turned around pretty quickly. You should be able to win division titles and play Oregon or Washington from the North. And even with Oregon, with Mario Cristobal is doing a great job, but it's not like he just has everything on lockdown and just owns the Pac-12. So there's an opportunity there for you to win conference championships, get in the playoff, and carry your conference. So I think it is a top job. Even though I was kind of down on it, you and you take a 30,000, you know, foot perspective. All right, where is it located? What's your competition to go through? Perception, history, all the things that you look for, facilities, weather, like the facilities. I'm curious, you probably have had more experience with their facilities than me. I've been there a couple times, you know, on bus tours, rolled through them. I'm not a big facility guy. Like, I don't need to see a waterfall in the bathroom. I don't, you know, in the locker room. I don't need to see an indoor practice facility, especially in LA when it doesn't rain much. But like, everything looked adequate to me. Like, you know, like, it looked like that shouldn't be something that prohibits you from recruiting. So it has all the pieces. Like, why wouldn't it be top three?
I've talked to a few different programs about the NIL, which, you know, other people have stated is just, hey, cheating's legal now. All right. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any reason now with the NIL that the USC job can't be a top five job. And if I were running one of these programs, on top of however aggressive I could be with recruiting now, I would want brand managers. I would want people that have been making six figures and I'd pay them double, that are doing stuff with Instagram and building these. I know this sounds stupid, but people on TikTok, like, I would be going after them to bring them in and then be having them sell their message to recruits and being like, if you can do whatever you think you're capable of as a brand, which again, we know there's going to be a big correction after a couple of years of some boosters being like, how much money did I give away? Like, was this really worth it? Okay, not that it hasn't happened previously, but there will be some kind of correction, even though I'm happy these kids are getting extra money. If you're about that, right? If you're a top 5-star kid and you're tweeting constantly and you're sending out videos and you're like, hey, I've narrowed it down to my final 13 and you live off of that attention, then you need to, if you're USC, be talking about LA being the backdrop to your not only football experience, but all whatever, even if it's not accurate. And even if you're not like, there's no reason why you shouldn't be making that like as big a part of the selling point on top of maybe playing in the NFL one day. And you've got to have a guy that has that kind of energy and that kind of vision to come in and do it. Because look, let's not kid ourselves. The schools that are picking off the kids, the really good kids from California, they were a little, let's just say, more aggressive in their recruiting. And USC, clearly with everything they've gone through, wasn't willing to be as aggressive. And if you want to read between the lines, read Bruce Feldman's piece going back to this summer. I apologize, he did it with another writer with The Athletic, where they were talking to all these different coaches about the state of California and the recruiting. And they're like, look, this is no state. Like, we're losing a lot of in-state guys here because we're not doing business the way other people are doing business. Now you don't have to worry about any of that stuff anymore. So I think with that, I mean, if they can't, look, they may not get the name right or whatever, but the opportunity, they are positioned even better now to keep talent in state, which they've not been doing a good job of.
Just pays more. look at the opportunity they would have in Hollywood alone. Like, you know, if they had the movie industry, there's no show like Entourage now, but remember Entourage was on and they had all the star cameos. They had every celebrity.
Were you athlete. In it? What season were you in it?
No, I missed that. I was too busy. I think I was busy in the weight room, but I couldn't shoot that day. I was too focused on the career.
Just think though, if you had been with the Giants, yeah. If you were a starter with the Giants and there Entourage was going on at the same time, you would have been in.
Yeah, there could have been a scene written in there. But think about that cell alone for today's high schooler to be a part of some show, some movie, some aspect of Hollywood that you could tie in, say, this is in our backyard and we can pay you to do these scenes in the off season. It'd be insane. Is The Rock show still going? Like, that one would be perfect. Like, he would be all over that right now.
Yeah, I do think that those things are always overblown. I'm with you. I'd be selling it. But I don't know how well.
Cash is king.
Yeah. Because, you know, how many guys go out to the Lakers thinking that they're going to be some huge star? Like, Dwight Howard thought he was going to be like really be in movies. It's like, actually, nobody likes you and you're weird. So I don't know that you're going to be a star of any of these movies you want to be in. And a lot of times, too, it's like with the basketball guys, be like, cool, you're 7'1". What do you want to play? You know, like, we're not going to be able to cast you for a new version of Friends, dude. It's not going to work. All right. You told me before this you have a philosophical shift that I'd be surprised about. Does this segue into this then? Or
yeah.
Is it something completely different?
No, I do think it does. I think it transitions perfectly. So the last time I was on here, and you know me, we've talked a lot about this, and this offseason has been such a major topic about NIL, where we're going with the sport, the concern of it. And the last time I was on with you, you asked me, there's enough money to go around. You're like, because that was the thing. It was always like, well, there's numbers. You can fudge the numbers. And is there enough money to go around for everybody? And you were like, there's enough money. I agree. I think with NIL, in a large part, this is kind of trying to solve the problem of the same four teams in the playoff since it's began, right? There's only the same four teams. We need parity. We want to break this thing up somehow. How are we going to do it? I'm looking 20 years in the future. I'm seeing what Brett Kavanaugh said, the Supreme Court Justice in Alston versus the NCAA, when he basically opened up the door, said what's been going on in college football is wrong. You cannot control the wages anymore. You can't any other business. This is illegal. He opened up the door. So I'm all in. Let's go all in. We're already minor league football. We're already minor league NFL. We have free agency. We have NIL. We've got all those pieces where it looks kind of like it. Let's just go all the way. Like, and then you want parity. Like, you want to see new players at the table, new seats at the table. Let's go ahead. Let's make them employees. Let's get them a union. Let's get them a portion of the revenue. And you know what else let's get? Let's have a draft. Let's have a cap, a salary cap. And let's go ahead and overhaul the sport. Like, if we're gonna, I'm all in. Like, I'm done. Like, because
You want a draft now?
Yeah, I'm all in. Like, hey, trades? You guys wanted this? You guys wanted this? School optional. Like, who cares? You want a degree? Like, sure, go ahead. But that's going to be like the 20-hour rule is going to be you're only allowed to go to school for 20 hours. The rest of the day, you're going to be working. But it, like, if we're going to go this way, and it does feel like we're getting there. And I think that's where Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, I think he's playing light years ahead because I think he's trying to get more aggressive. It's why he was willing to add Oklahoma and Texas. They know what's coming. So they want to have the most marketable product out there so they can get the best media rights deal. So then when they have to start spreading the money around to the players, they have the biggest pie. That's the term they always use in the NFLPA, like the portions of the pie. They want the biggest pie available. So you start have to pay the players. You have more money to give it to them. Let's get there. Like, let's just get there.
Does that mean UConn would get the first pick? Because I don't like this idea.
Well, it might be Vanderbilt. Like, in reality, like, it might be worst of the SEC. That's where I worry about the future of the game, but we're going there. Like, whether we like it or not. So if we're tired of seeing, and basically I had this epiphany during Alabama, just rolling through Miami. I took the under 11.5 wins thinking, surely they're going to have a little bit, just a little bit of regression. And I didn't think Miami would beat them. I thought maybe it would be in College Station against Texas A&M, maybe LSU, maybe on the road against Auburn. They're going to run the table again. Like, it's just because they have the most talent. That's why I told my Miami Hurricanes friends who were diehard Hurricanes fans, I'm like, you guys don't have a chance. It is not a fair fight. And for 11 teams, maybe 12 that play Alabama every year, it's not a fair fight. You know what's a fair fight? The NFL. Like, it's a fair fight every single weekend. Rosters are marginally better or marginally worse. And the difference from the Kansas City Chiefs to the Jacksonville Jaguars, as bad as they look, it's not that great of a difference. Like, I'm done.
I still look. The lack of parity is frustrating for everybody. People are going to be more mad about it because basically that means all these other teams that think they have a chance don't have a chance after watching Bama the first couple of weeks. I still like to believe in the idea of surprises. 20 of 28 spots going to those four teams is absurd. I don't think that's normal. I don't think it would continue, but maybe it would. I mean, what you're talking about would bring all sorts of parity. I think you're blowing it up a little bit more, but the NIL thing, I think the NCAA is giving up a bit where they're just like, I actually think after the Nevin Shapiro thing, they kind of were like, all right, so we had this guy dead to rights and we fucked this one up too. It's like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing here? And when some of the recruiting stuff is based around, you know, before the NIL, it's like, okay, well, how do some of these stories work? And you would hear about, like, well, the relative gets the job with whatever booster runs some company, big company there. And then what's the NCAA going to do? Tell somebody they're not qualified for a $100,000 a year job because of their education? Like, good luck with that, because you're not going to be able to prove it. I think the NIL is the best way the NCAA could say, hey, here's all this extra money now, and you still can't have any of ours.
Yes.
That's really what this was.
Absolutely. And that's why I thought it was the compromise, because I really don't want to see players become employees. I really don't. Because I think playing in the NFL was the shock to the system of it is a job. You're no longer like, guys are not passionate. There's a few I get that love the game of football. But it's like, what's the score? Who cares? Give me my check. Like, you go on the plane. I'll never forget on the Giants, we went on the road. When we walked back on the plane, the guy was there, like the payroll guy, and he had all these envelopes and be like, dude, here's, and alphabetically, like, here, Cannell, here's yours. You get your paycheck. And then you walk by Wellington Merrow, who's the owner of the team. And I look at him like, just like this look of disgust, like, I can't believe you have to cash that check after that performance. You know, and then after a good game, it's like, yeah, go spend that money. Like, it was a weird atmosphere, but you lose a game, doesn't matter. Just give me my paycheck. And you think like players think now they're chewed up and spit out in the college world. Wait till you get cut. Wait till you start paying for a true paycheck as an employee and they don't have to honor your scholarship. Like, that's the kind of, I don't want that to happen. And my philosophical shift is clearly a little bit hyperbolic, but it's kind of where we're headed. The NIL thing, I kind of was a little bit hopeful. And granted, it's the first year. I was a little bit hopeful that maybe you'd see a program that was kind of on the outside, like maybe an Iowa or Nebraska. Nebraska's rabid fan base, you know, deep along, like deep boosters. They sell out all the time. Maybe they would be a team, a program that would have somebody step up or a group of people step up, say, you know what? We're tired. We're tired of, you know, not being the team we were in the 90s. Here's $10 million. Go buy us the best roster. You know, best 4 and 5 stars. Let's go lock it up. Maybe that happens, but what we've seen transpire early, what are the biggest deals we've seen at Clemson, at Alabama, at Ohio State, like at the usual suspects? So like,
that's the problem. No, you're right. Because I mean, if Nebraska says, hey, here's $10 million to go get players that we didn't have here before, whoever you were going to pay the most, you'd have to pay him like 5 times what those other programs are going to give him. And then you start saying like, this is ridiculous.
Right.
You know, I talked to one guy. It was like, imagine if you get a recruit wrong in the previous regime. It's like, all right, we got this 4-star guy. He was wrong. But now if you're staff and you're telling the guy like, hey, you got to write a check for this kid, and then you're wrong. Right. And it's like a totally different deal. It's just like, hey, we're talking 7 figures to this guy. We're locking him up. And then you're wrong about it. I mean, you thought the job was tough before.
Do you know real quick, this last thing on NIL. Do you know the thing that's hilarious about this? The NCAA was like, well, the one thing we're not going to allow is this is not going to be for recruiting. Like, we're going to let this go, but this is not pay for play. And then we've seen all these deals and nobody's like, yep, well, this is what it's going to be. So I just think that's hilarious. The NCAA was still like trying to go to their grave saying this is not going to be about recruiting. And that's all this is about.
That's like the Alliance memo that made it out in the bullet points. It was like, you know, gender equality. And then it was all of these things. And like the eighth one
academics.
Yeah. And the eighth one was like an ability to increase our television revenue. And you just go, you know, but I don't know. Look, I think the society's conditioned to like fake, and that's what people think everybody wants. And it's better to say all of these things that no one thinks is true, but we consume it better because we just came straight out and said, hey, it's just about the money. Then they get crushed by that, by the crowd that's like, hey, we already know what it's about. You know, I think what you're saying here, I don't want to get too derailed on this because there's still some other college football stuff that I want to talk about. I know you, and this is you telling everybody that hated the NCAA, hated the college athletic structure, that you're like, okay, you wanted it all. Here you go. And I don't want that button to be pressed. I just don't. I think there's a way that I think football maybe could just become its own thing where it's still aligned with the schools and you just let them do whatever they want. I mean, it was close to that happening already. And whatever things you want to have in place for the NCAA. Dana O'Neill was writing about this week, The Athletic, and it was really good. It might be a little boring for some people, but she was digging through the entire rule book, and you can find all sorts of stuff in there that doesn't make any sense, but they've got to revamp this whole thing. But then after the fact, you're like, okay, what does it matter? I know you've talked about commissioner. Commissioner would be just as irrelevant as the president of the NCAA at this point, because the school presidents and the commissioners of the conferences aren't going to listen to that guy either. So I don't know. All right, let's get back to some more on the field stuff. Iowa.
Ready?
Hey,
It's happening again.
Yeah, but this team, my biggest thing with Iowa that year was the resume. And I admit part of my flaw was I couldn't get over that Wisconsin win when they shouldn't have won that game. And I'm like, wait, you want this team playing for the national title? After they lost to Michigan State, I felt like, you know what? They were a little better than I thought. The resume still wasn't even close. You were arguing for the football playoff because you just wanted to fuck with me the whole season. That's fine. But they are defensively really solid. I think their 1-2 punch, the quarterback running back deal is good enough. I don't know that I'm ready to pick them against Ohio State in a Big Ten championship game, but where are you right now with the Hawkeyes?
I was so glad you brought them up because I think we're going to see 2015, right? It was 2015 when they ran the table, lost to Michigan State. I think we're going to see it all over again. Did you see?
Yeah, but this is more impressive. This is 2 ranked teams to start the season. They've held them to 23 points. I'm telling you, throughout that Iowa run, there wasn't the resume. And look, the Wisconsin game was so ugly that, yes, I couldn't help. Because most people, I guarantee that I was arguing with, didn't watch a 3-hour Iowa-Wisconsin game, the noon kickoff that day.
Do you realize they got outgained against Iowa State 339 to 173?
That's also the turnovers.
Absolutely it is. I just feel like this is going to be a team that everyone's going to hate. They're going to be like, ugh, like, I don't want to see these guys go against Alabama. And I don't blame them. Like, it is not pretty. So at some point, like, kudos to the AP who gave them the massive jump and put them at five. But are they going to have the balls to drop them down at all? Because they play Kent State, Colorado State, Maryland before they play Penn State.
Hey, Penn State, if they beat Penn State, like, I think Penn State's good, not great, but I really like their physicality. You know, there were certain things in that Wisconsin game I didn't like, but Clifford was better in the second week, again, against a lesser opponent. There's some stuff there with Penn State where I feel like that's a nice win, man.
I do, too. And the resume will be okay, but I just envision a scenario where, like, if the conversation becomes Alabama, Georgia, Oregon, you know, and let's say Alabama beats Georgia in a bloodbath, like, you know, like a close game, Oregon wins the Pac-12 and Oklahoma's in as a lock. Like, Iowa's going to be that team that if they get there, no one's going to want to see get in. And I wouldn't blame them. And I think it's going to be eerily reminiscent of that year. Like, they're just not pretty, but man, they play incredible defense. They run the football. I mean, it's like a great 1995 team. Right. But it's 2021 where you have to be more balanced.
If they beat Penn State, let's see where Wisconsin is when they play them at the end of October and they beat Ohio State. That's different. You know, like, you brought up a good point, though. And it's kind of like the Feinbaum thing that drives me crazy, where it's like, I don't want to see Oklahoma in the playoff again. You're like, you know what? If they're one of the four teams with the best resume, they're in. I don't care. I don't want to hear about how it looked before. And the same thing will happen to Notre Dame. Oh, I don't want to see Notre Dame again. And clearly he's not the only voice saying these things. The playoff. And I don't think the committee's influenced by this, but our discussions about it should never be influenced of like, oh, that's going to be terrible. It's like, okay, but were you there? Like, were you there at the end of the season winning your conference championship, if that's the way it lines up, to be one of the clear four teams that should be voted into the playoff? And if you are and you don't like the matchup, it doesn't mean like, hey, you know what? I think A&M would be a better matchup. Like, people that argue that kind of stuff. And granted, look, A&M's got some issues because Haynes King, who was clearly the better quarterback compared to Calzado, he got crunched three different. I didn't know what was hurt most, his neck, his other leg, or the right leg, which is broken, I guess, and he's going to be out for some time. Calzado, who lost the starting job or lost the competition for the starting job, I think we saw why. He was all over the place in that Colorado game. And, you know, the defense is going to be there for A&M because they're talented. I actually like their running backs. I like their tight end. But, you know, the A&M thing will be weird if they coast for a while. But look, they'll have to answer for it at some point when they play Bama, so we'll find out for real. But it'd be weird if A&M were a one-loss team, then not in the conference championship, if Bama runs the table 12-0, how the Colorado thing will be looked at. And it probably won't matter at all. And then if Haynes King is back, then they'll just say, well, whatever, Calzado played that game. So I'm already kind of like projecting all the different things that I know you have a lot of angst about, but I'm actually happy that 2 weeks in, I think we are in this shuffling stage where Iowa State's probably out because they're going to beat Oklahoma twice, but the Big 12 still in it. I think the Pac-12 feels stronger at the top with two teams that have a chance are going to play each other in Oregon and UCLA in October. The ACC, Clemson's probably going to roll through these teams, I would think, unless they're flawed and we haven't really quite seen it yet. And, you know, the Georgia game, whatever. But I'm at least open to the shuffling of some of these conferences outside of what we're seeing in Bama right now.
I love it. Like, that was one of my takes from the weekend. And it's always been kind of like, if you remove Alabama and maybe Georgia, like, how crazy?
Maybe.
How much? Right. We don't know for sure yet. Right.
The problem is Georgia's schedule, like,
it's like, you know, whatever.
We'll see. Right. And by the way, Florida, the backup QB behind Emory Jones, Richardson, did you see him this weekend? Mm-hmm. And now I know he had the hamstring.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what his status is going to be.
Yeah. I saw AR-15 trending and I was like, oh no, not another, like, you know, a bad number 15, the quarterback. That's his nickname for the Gators. He needs to be starting like today. And I think Dan Mullen, he reiterated that the quarterback was going to be Emory Jones versus Alabama. I think it's only because they're playing Alabama. I think if Florida was playing anybody else, he would make the switch. I don't think he wants to throw a young quarterback to the Wolves just yet. But I think sooner rather than later, like by the Georgia game, I think Anthony Richardson is your quarterback for the Gators. I don't even think it's close. Like, he has better skills. He's made better decisions. He's a better runner. I think he's a total package. And I think you're just going to see it before it's only a matter of time.
Did we leave anything out
from the college football world?
I mean, we didn't really touch on Oklahoma. It's one of the top teams there, but I mean, the
They haven't done anything yet.
The Tulane game was kind of weird, to be honest.
Yeah,
with you.
You know, my boy Dusty called the game, and he was saying it was weird, and it was a weird circumstance because Tulane moved. They moved the game to Norman. I guess there were only like 20,000 people at the game. It was a noon kickoff. It was kind of lethargic, but I don't know. Spencer Rattler to me is a tough one to judge. He was a little bit careless with the football, similar to the way he was last year. And he has like this vibe about him, like where nothing bothers him almost to a fault, like whatever, like I'm fine. He's a little bit too careless. Like I worry about Spencer Rattler as the guy to lead the team to the national championship. You've got to, can't worry about being cool or how you're looking when you're on the field. You gotta roll through teams like that early in the season. And if he gets cute, one of these teams are going to clip them just like they did last year, whether it was Kansas State or Iowa State. Somebody's going to clip them.
I think we covered most of it. I don't think we left out
All right, so I have a question for you.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't going to ask about Florida State, but...
Well, okay, we can do that after. Do you... So can you be considered the super conference because you added Oklahoma and Texas? Like, oh, this great addition. But then at the same time, like Arkansas beats one of those teams that was supposed to make you a super team, and Arkansas is a bottom dweller in the West. Like, can both of those things be true? Or are you now just adding two teams with one being exceptional and the other being another team?
So basically the goal of this concept is, can we find a way to not give the SEC credit for adding two teams that you think probably makes it the gap is even wider, as wide as it's been.
It doesn't make sense to me where they're all like, yeah, welcome to the SEC. Well, yeah, well, that means you're not welcoming a great team. They just lost it. Like, I thought you were doing this to make yourself stronger. Like, are you really doing that?
So you would argue then if Texas went to the ACC, you'd be like, whatever, we already have Pitt. You would say that. This is where you tweeted that out today, and then I pointed out that you ate up every UCLA dumping on LSU tweet. You loved every moment of it. And I would say if Chip Kelly weren't the coach, I would have been a little harsher about it, because I think if you're doing the get the gat dance after you win your first regular season game or second for UCLA, and LSU was doing it at the White House, just slightly different yes. parameters there. But you loved all the UCLA content. You couldn't get enough of it. And now you're telling me that you don't like the welcome to the SEC Texas stuff because Arkansas ran them over, by the
way.
It was ugly.
It was. And now Sark, like,
it's a second game. Okay. Yeah. Here's what I'm telling you. It's a second game. We can make all the Texas jokes you want. I just refuse to believe that Texas now is just going to be, you know, forgive me here. I'm just trying to pick a bit. I don't think Texas is going to be UNC football now for the next 20 years. And I know it's been a really long time. I mean, somebody was making the argument today that like Texas has got it right once in how many decades with Mac. I can't believe that it would keep happening. And as disappointing as that game was, can we give Sark, I don't know, a month? Can we give him a season? You know, can we give him a season? I swear to God, the Texas is back thing after the Notre Dame game, which remember we were doing the show and I was like, cut that up. And I said, guys, we need to play this. Like we were the originators of the Texas is back sound. I used to hit it all the time. We'd have Tess on. And I would just randomly hit it. But Tess loved it. That made it. And then Ellinger, after they beat Georgia and be like, hey, guess what? Like that's made it worse. And I guess I'll look at like a USC going through all their problems and your squad in Florida State going through all the problems. I mean, pick the brands that continue to have these long droughts. I don't know what people want them to do. They're not going to just stop playing football, right? They're going to try to figure it out. And so far, 2 weeks in for Sark, this is not what you wanted.
Their win total was 8.5. Let's see where they finish. They're probably around an 8-win team when it's all said and done. You know, I'm surprised they lost the way they lost, but they got a lot of work to do. Should we go out with a goat of the week?
That was yeah, let's Rudy's do goat idea, of the right? week. No, it was yours originally, and we didn't give it enough love. And I've always felt great shame for that. So, yeah, that's you. Let's finish up with goat of the week. What do you got?
So, goat of the week, for those who maybe don't know, was a segment we did on Russillo and Cannell, and it could be anything, right? It could be goat of the week. It could be, and you take it for what it is. My goat of the week
You were early on this because just GOAT gets thrown around so much now that you were like, who's
this?
Well,
I couldn't have done it without Greeny. I couldn't have done it without Greeny because Greeny was throwing around GOAT like every single show. It was like, oh, that was the greatest of all time, right? That was the greatest performance. What a GOAT. So my GOAT.
Greeny invited me on. I was on Get Up once and he was like, no one's more plugged into the NBA than Ryan Russillo is. And I was like, well, Woj definitely is. And he looks at you with those eyes because Greeny can't get that pissed at you, although he got pissed at me a couple times, which is rare. People loved it. And you're just like, you can't introduce me as the most plugged in NBA guy in the country because there's a pretty good list of reporters that actually are more plugged in than I am. But like, don't GOAT me here. And that's exactly what happened.
Yes, exactly. All right. So my GOAT of the week, I'll give it to Brady Scott. Do you know who Brady Scott is? Congratulations on the engagement.
Yes.
Must have been a phenomenal moment for you to get down on bended knee. At Doak Campbell Stadium, right there in the end zone, while the other team is celebrating what was the worst loss in Florida State history. Man, this is hard for me to discuss because I get it. Like, I get, like, congratulations.
Just so people realize, Brady plays for Florida State. He's a backup offensive lineman, yep. I believe. And yes. While he had prepped this out, I think they're beating Jacksonville State. I'm going to propose to my girlfriend. In the stadium, in front of everybody, he just
flew
went
in
with
his
it.
Family.
Oh, so flew a bunch of family flew in. So that's probably why he did it. But the screen grabs of it are tough for your guy.
Well, they're tough for me. Like, and then there's this where Twitter isn't the real world, and everybody's like, let him do his thing. Like, this is personal. This is his family. And then they're throwing because Coach Bowden died, and his big thing was faith, family, football. And people are like, well, live by what Coach Bowden said. This is family. It's more important than football. All those things are true. But man, it's weird because I don't want to just bash somebody to bash them. And I don't want to bash him or his fiance. Like, it is a big moment. But how do we get to here where we let that happen? How do we have a mindset that is that detached from what just transpired in the field? Like, we only lost 5 times, I think, in 4 years, maybe 6. So when we lost, it was devastation. Like, I didn't even want to see my girlfriend. I didn't want to see my family after the game because you were devastated. Like, you didn't want to do anything. We'd go back to the dorm and we'd drink. Like, and just drink our sorrows away. And then to have that little feel for what it means. And like, a lot of people, hey, maybe he's a nice guy. Maybe he's too nice.
Listen to you right now.
But like, that's the problem. Maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe we're too nice. Maybe we don't care enough about winning and we're caring because that obviously took a lot of prep and it took a lot of thought and he did it as opposed to maybe prepping for the game. And then afterwards to like be quote tweeting at Barstool and like, hey, do you want to invite to the wedding? Like, again, it was the worst loss in Florida State history. It's the first loss to an FCS opponent and we're making light of something he did on the field. Like, just lay low or like call an audible. Like, there's some great rooftop bars. Could have done, like, I would have had no problem with that.
Go to recess early.
Yeah, go to recess. Charlie Park's the new spot up there. Beautiful spot. Like, go up there. Like, you could have still had a romantic thing. Like, that's good. But man, it's just a tough look. And then he's got his offensive lineman buddies who are defending him. And I'm like, what are we doing? This is a massive, like, disconnect for me from the mentality. Like, and I'll ask you, what do you think this happens at Bama? After a loss to anybody, they could lose to Auburn, like in an Iron Bowl. You think that's happening at Bama? Think that's happening at Ohio State? Think that's happening at Clemson? No, like it's not. That's a mentality that does not creep in. Nick Saban's chewing out his team after they blew out Miami. Like he might chew out a player for doing it after a win. Like, right, where's your focus? Win that, do it after the championship game. Don't do it after this game. I don't know.
There's a lot of the week. Okay, there's a lot in there that I have to digest. The one I'm definitely pushing back on is that because he was prepping to propose to his girlfriend meant that a backup lineman couldn't prep for the game. That's ridiculous.
Right. Okay.
Okay, I'm going to push back on that one. I don't know if a guy at Bama or Clemson would do it. I mean, generations, as we see, people get younger and younger. That's usually what happens in science. We're constantly being like, why would you go ahead and do that? I bet you there would be somebody else that would do it. I can understand it not being a great look and maybe he needed the audible. If you were the offensive coordinator right now, would you demand an annulment?
I usually, you know, Court, my wife, I usually go to her for things like this, perspective. Like, let me get a grip of reality. Let me make sure I'm not being like chauvinistic or just, you know, not being sensitive enough. Yeah, all of it. All of it. I go to her. I showed her. I'm like, she said, wait, are you serious? Like, and that was my response. I haven't commented on this online. The only thing I did, I saw the picture. I was like, is this real? Like, cause I thought it was doctored. I thought it was like a Florida Gator fan trolling Florida State saying, look how bad it is. They're proposing after this loss. And then it was real. And I was like, wow. So I showed Court and she's like, I can't believe that happened after that game. So she's on my side is all I would like to say. It is typically the offensive linemen that get whipped though. Man, I'm a little bit of a loss for words. I don't even know where else to go with it.
Their pool is smaller than the rest of the other players. They're big. Yes. They're big guys. And
like, does it matter?
Hottest.
No, yeah. Like that's where I don't want to rip him. You kind of did
for 5 minutes straight.
But I'm surprised we're here. I'm surprised this is where we are at Florida State, but it is what it is. And that's where we are at Florida State.
You are on every morning. Let's get a plug for the radio show again.
Yes. Sirius XM, ESPNU Radio, Channel 84 with Dusty Dvorak, 7 to 10.
Eastern. Yep. Always good to catch up. I appreciate you jumping in throughout the season, man. Looking forward to it.
You're the best. See ya.
This episode is brought to you by Arby's, the perfect sandwich. Let me think. Buffalo chicken sandwich is done right. Can change your life. I've never been the same in the best way possible when I experienced my first one. Also loving to travel, I've had gyros, also known as gyros. I think if you go to Arby's and you order a gyro, they're not going to judge you. And that's what I like about them. Nice chicken, perfectly sauced, butter lettuce, good body. You know what I'm talking about. And that's what Arby's has. They have more than you may even realize. Get out there and explore. Well, now is the chance to try Arby's and find your favorite sandwich. With a wide range of options, see for yourself that Arby's sells more than roast beef. Plus, for a limited time, Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April online only. Simply join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. Order on the app or Arby's.com. This episode is brought to you by Hulu Plus Live TV. Looking for a better way to watch live TV? Stream your favorite sports and shows on over 95 live channels with Hulu Plus Live TV. Get access to Hulu's entire streaming library, Disney Plus and ESPN Plus, all in one plan. Start your free trial of Hulu Plus Live TV today. Live TV plan required. Restrictions apply. Access content from each service separately. Learn more at Hulu.com.
You want details? Bye. I drive a Ferrari, 355 Cabriolet. What's up? I have a ridiculous house in the South Fork. I have every toy you can possibly imagine. And best of all, kids, I am liquid. So, now you know what's possible. Let me tell you what's required.
Okay, let's do a couple life advices. Set the tone for the weekend here. Lifeadvicerr@gmail.com. Good to have Kyle back. Kyle, checking in. How are we?
Good. Couple flights in a couple days. Always sucks, but I'm back. Feels good to be back.
What's the next trip? Not for a while, right? Just
not for a while. Yeah. All right.
Sounds good. Thinking about you. All right, here we go. My fiance and I are about to move internationally for her to pursue a master's degree. Well, look at you. When we both graduated from undergrad, I knew what I wanted to do and went and got my master's while she worked and supported me, paid for around 90% of rent, utilities, food, etc. All right. That is a 90-10 split support on her side. We agreed that when she went to pursue her master's that I would do the same for her. I have no issues covering all the necessities of living in full or any activities we do together. My problem is she recently brought up she also wants some kind of stipend for her own personal spending. That wasn't anything that happened while I was doing my master's. Those are two sentences for you, huh? Part of this is because most of my master's happened during the pandemic, so there wasn't much personal spending to do, but it wasn't something which happened pre-pandemic either. My issue with the stipend question is that I'm going to have to start paying off student loans and would like to start accumulating some savings to have a start on paying for things like a wedding, house, emergency funds. And I don't really have anything like that. My father or my family isn't in a great position to be giving me a pile of money. All right, so we're not backed by the family here. In addition, she has about 8% of our liquid assets. My argument is that she should pay for her own expenses. She says she really wants to experience the new place we'll be living, and so do I, but I don't think I should have to be on the hook for stuff she wants to go and do on her own. I know it's a long explanation. Actually, you should see some of her emails. This is pretty efficient so far. I wanted to give you as full a picture as possible. Let me know what your take is. Wow. I don't know if this is a big deal, a huge deal, or not a big deal at all. Okay. As you point out, you didn't get a stipend. Did you ask? And were you turned down? I don't know what your spending habits are. It appears if you're already thinking about other things and wanting to save, and they're going to be paying off the student loans, that there's little things I'm picking up for this, that you have some sort of financial responsibility and that you're not just out of control here. I would also say, like, if you guys are going to get married, whatever the stipend is, isn't there a pretty good chance, like, at this point, it's all sort of your money anyway, and that you'd be paying for dinners and you'd be paying for experiencing this new place, if you're trying to do it in somewhat of a budget to worry about the rest of the stuff. You're going to marry her by all accounts, right? So I don't know if this is a draw a line in the sand type of thing. I think it's a weird request, because my guess would be, like, whatever some of those personal spending things would be, like, is she not allowed to buy a shirt had she not had the stipend? Like, I don't know what that relationship is. Like, what if she charges a shirt and a handbag on something? Is it, like, is it a huge argument? Or is the stipend for these items that, you know, again, they make us feel better in short bursts, and then you see the handbag in your closet 6 months later and you're like, you know, that didn't solve any problems. I mean, you could do something weird and be like, all right, yeah, that's no problem. We'll do a stipend, but we're probably not going to be able to get married for, you know, a couple more years now. Like, whatever we thought our start date of marriage and all that was, we may have to delay that a little bit because of the student loans and your stipend. If she's big into the wedding and wanting to marry you, that might be a tactic you could use there. I guess I just don't like the formality of it, but I don't want to be completely dismissive of her either. I just don't understand, why would she need a stipend when chances are this is, she's the one that has 80% of your liquid assets, and you're supposed to get this. This feels so transactional and so businesslike, and maybe this is the way you guys like it, that it almost feels a little cold. But I don't know if you're planning on marrying this person, if it's worth that much of an argument. If we're talking about, what, I don't know, $1,000 a month, $500 a month for the stipend. I mean, it's probably not $1,000 if you guys are both students. I don't know what kind of money you're pulling down, but is it enough of a, is the dollar amount high enough to start an argument where now maybe you don't have to spend for a wedding at all, would be the calculus that I think you have to put yourself through. Kyle, do you ever give a girl a stipend? I could definitely see you as a guy that, like, picked up a girl's car payment after, like, dating for 4 months.
I did a thing with a phone and I regretted it later. You know, she was like, oh, I just need, like, we were like a couple months in and she was like, I just got to get this phone and nobody wants to help me. And I was like, I think this is where I'm supposed to loan you $100 to fix your phone. And it turns out it wasn't a loan. I found out later it was to give me a new phone screen. So that was about as far in as I've ever gotten with something like that.
Assuming that wasn't a long-term relationship.
No, it was one of those white hot summer things.
Nice.
What, do you want to further explain what a white hot summer is?
Actually, I wish I didn't say it that way. Now that you said it, it doesn't sound as good as it was in my head.
No, actually, I thought it sounded amazing. I just want more clarity.
Well, isn't white hot supposed to be like one of the hottest hots? Isn't that what they say? Like, there's blue, like, the blue flame is hot, but the white flame is the hottest flame. Correct? It's good to be back, guys.
It's good to have you, man.
Yeah, I'm gonna say, you know what? Let's get the flame chart out here.
So it's a medium hot summer fling.
Yeah, I had a kind of a blue hot fall.
What was that blue?
God damn it, guys!
Hot star, because you remember they used to teach you in, like, science class about all the stars, right? And I always thought blue was the hottest.
Oh, I don't know. Let's see here. Uh-oh. Blue might be it.
Well, maybe it was blue before the phone thing, and maybe it turned white after the phone.
Got notched down a level.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, all my charts are in Kelvin, which isn't going to help most of the listeners.
Instead of colors, yeah.
Yeah. What color is the hottest flame?
Because, like, oddly enough, I think red is the least hot.
Yeah,
I knew that. That's why I didn't say red hot summer.
Yeah, that blows your mind when you're a kid.
I got a chart right here.
Great.
I don't know if this is Calvin or whatever, but Calvin. It goes from least to least hottest to most hottest is red, orange, yellow, like a lighter yellow, white, light blue, and then like a dark blue is the hottest.
Yeah, it wasn't the hottest summer ever. I'd say white hot.
White hot is a medium summer. White would actually be in the middle.
I wouldn't be in the middle. You named like four colors before you got to white. There was only three different shades of blue at the end.
It's all right. Third from the hottest.
I stand by it.
Yeah, it was a phone. It wasn't a car. Blue flame summer.
At the time, though, it definitely felt like it could have been a car. It's like $100. I mean, most of the things that I was buying, I could buy at least two of them with $100. So,
I had a buddy who was like a lock for after a couple months of sleeping with a girl, he would be taking over their car payment. Yeah. And he was not positioned financially to be doing any of that kind of stuff. And then he would bitch about breaking up and he'd be like, you know, but I actually, now that I'm older and more removed from it, I realized I think it was some form of control. So yeah. Even though he was not, I mean, look, I'm like, oh, hey, thanks, Dr. Russillo. He liked to do it because that way it felt like they had a hard time getting away from him, which is something almost every woman that hung out with him wanted to get away from for a while. I mean, I remember he had this one disastrous relationship. She wasn't even a legal citizen. She was on her way out. He had some family money, but I don't know that the family was in a hurry to give him any of it. So it wasn't like he was living that way. He wasn't living large by any sense of them. But he just was into her. And, you know, she would say stuff like, take me to the mall. You have to buy me something. And he'd be like, all right, whatever. It was always, I'd just be like, this is the worst. This was not with one of my high peak living situations, obviously. And, you know, she was nice enough to the rest of us, but it was always a bit of, there was always some drama around it. And then he finally got his car fixed. She didn't have a car. He said he should. So she left the first day he got his car back on the road after paying for repairs. She crashed it. And then she had to leave the scene because she wasn't legal. And she came back to the apartment and then he had to go and pretend it was him or something for the insurance. No. And it was like, he had like legal problems too. I mean, the whole thing, he was just one of those guys. But whenever I think of like guy who takes over whoever he's dating car payment, I would always think of him. But Kyle, I think you're doing better than that guy is. So don't
yeah. And for, yeah. And for this guy, it's like, I wonder if it's better that she just came straight out and asked him. Cause I've also been in relationships where like past relationships where girls would just talk about how they have money troubles and they don't have it in them to be like, do you think I could borrow $50? Or do you think I could borrow $100, throw in my tank? Like it would just, all of our time would be the complaining about, oh, there's no fucking gas in my car. Or, oh my God, I don't know what I'm gonna do about this payment or oh, this. And it's like, that's our whole time together. And it's like, you clearly want me to say, well, hold on, I'll save you. Maybe it's better that she is just like, listen, I'm gonna need some money. Do you think I could just have some?
Wouldn't like the middle ground though be, you know, it doesn't have to be a stipend. He could just say, you know, all right, within reason, buy what you need, put it on a card, and then you could sort of monitor what those spending things are. If it's out of control and you can have a conversation, but if it's not that big of a deal, there's no reason to make a big deal out of it. If it's only like a couple $100 that she's spending, because I don't think he specified like how much money she wanted, right?
Right.
So no, it's not that bad. It's not worth starting a fight over.
It's just so transactional. You know what I mean? It just feels like, what are you guys, both accountants? Like what's going on here?
Sometimes that there's that awkward period before you get married where like you kind of know you're heading in that direction, but you don't really know if you should have one bank account yet. Like it is kind of odd. So maybe they're just in that period.
Maybe she's already doing his laundry. Maybe they're already shitting with the door open. They're just not married. So they don't have a bank account that's together. And she's like, since it's already going to be this way now, can we just, I don't know. It's strange. I wonder if she used the word stipend or if that's his description of it.
So what's your money situation, Surdi, with the wife? Like, I mean, look, I know your wife and I know you guys are both so just like your tempo is a very manageable tempo as a couple. You're both that individually. So I can't imagine this was too much of a deal. And I also don't think you'd be like, actually, my wife kind of, that's the one thing I don't like about her. She sucks. I don't think you would say that.
Suck a nerve there.
this seems solvable, but I don't like it. Is what I would say about the email. I don't know. Give me a sense. How do you do it? You're the biggest grown up on the podcast, which is embarrassing to myself, but go for it.
No, I mean, we bought a house before we were even engaged. We just knew where the relationship was headed. Like, I think this guy is in the same situation. I don't remember exactly what I mean, we definitely had separate bank accounts. Like, we didn't have a joint bank. We don't even actually have a joint bank account now, I don't think. I mean, she has access to mine, but we still have separate bank accounts even when we're married because, you know, you get paid, you know, from our different employers that way. But she handles most of the finance, to be honest with you. And I just kind of sit back and trust her for the most part. But there is sort of like a weird thing of do you or do you not, when you know it's headed in that direction, how early do you kind of combine funds and see where it's at? We never went through that problem, but I know plenty of my friends have.
Yeah, plenty of my friends have. And you just go, wait. And then, I don't know. Like, I know that I would probably have a hard time just being like, yeah, get whatever you want. Like, just spend. But then, you know, the counter is like, well, if we're starting a family and having your kids, then go for it. You know, I couldn't imagine being in a relationship where I look at some of my friends who are basically like on an allowance. You know, I'll be like, what do you mean? Like, you can't get your money? Like, well, no, I'm only allowed to have like so much. I'm like, well, what did you do? Like, do you have a gambling problem that I didn't know about or something like that? She's like, no, she just wants to make sure that, you know. And I'd be like, wait, but you're working and she isn't, and she's in charge of the money and you're only allowed a certain amount and you haven't done anything horribly financially to the family? Be like, no, just the way she likes it. I'd be like, I would be in a van by Friday. Like, there's just no way.
Now, sometimes look, I think dudes like that structure. I'm not saying I do, but
you know what?
I think
you're
right.
There
are guys that like that structure. And yeah, it's odd. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It wouldn't be for me. Like, I like to have financial freedom, and my wife and I, we don't like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and like, you know, criticize her about purchases she makes, and she doesn't criticize me about purchases I make or give me an allowance to tell me how much I can spend. We both kind of know, like, if, hey, that's probably not a great purchase. But some guys like to have their wife control sort of their finances, even if they're like kind of the breadwinner in the relationship, and vice versa.
Yeah, I don't really have a great answer for this one, other than it's concerning. But if all of the other stuff is great and she just wants a little walking around money and it's not going to ruin you, it's all going to be each other's money. If everything's going to go well, all the money is both of your money anyway. So, you know, I know you feel like, hey, I'm now supporting her the way she supported me, but I didn't have the stipend. I mean, how about you? Maybe you could just look at it this way. A, she supported you when you were going through it. Now you have to support her. You didn't get a stipend. She did. Is it going to break you? Is it going to break you? Like, I'm on your side here a little bit. I get your point. It feels a little annoying, but is it so annoying? Is it worth, like, there's just going to be stuff that you come across in a relationship where you just go, all right, this is the one thing I don't love, but I like the rest of it. I like the rest of it. All right. Let's see.
Yeah, try to work out a favorable stipend, I think, is probably, you're probably going to do the stipend side. Just try to work it out so it's not terrible.
Maybe we don't know. Maybe there's just three of us are oblivious to the stipend world out there in relationships. That'd be great if you meet somebody and be like, what are your goals? Do you want a family? What do you think a fair stipend would be?
Like, what? I just hope she didn't say the word stipend. I hope that's him like reflecting on it. Like, she wants a fucking stipend.
I just think they seem so matter of fact about the financial part of it. But I like the wedding threat, because if she wants the wedding, be like, yeah, that's cool. We'll get you a stipend, but we're not going to get married for like,
just know,
4 or 5 years now instead of 3. But that's cool. I'm down with that. Or you could say, hey, isn't your dad supposed to pay for the wedding? Or you know what? Don't spend $100,000 on a wedding. $100,000 is high, but the number that people spend on weddings and it being accepted, I, even at a young age, had I gotten married, I would have been like, let's keep this small and have a house down payment. How about that idea? But, you know, most men lose that argument too. All right, here we go. One more here. This one's a little dicey. 5'9", 165. I've been dating a girl for 2+ years. Things have been going really well. Met her through a mutual friend. We really hit it off. Things have gotten serious to the point where I spend my holidays with her and her family recently. We're both in our early 30s. I think she might be the one. One issue that came up a couple months ago while I was in a month-long lockdown, I was browsing some adult websites and came across pictures of my girlfriend online.
No way.
By accident. Just by accident. There's a lot of content out there. And you happen to see the girl that you are thinking about marrying. The first photo I saw was a mirror selfie of herself in her underwear. She looked a lot younger in the photo. My guess was taken while she was in college. I was pretty surprised by this, as she's been really conservative the entire time I've known her. Not one to post sexy revealing photos on social media or anything. That doesn't mean anything, but I get your point. So being curious, I reverse searched the photo. Well, we got like Neve and Max over here on the case. I reverse searched the photo, and to my shock and horror, I got a lot of results back on Google. In total, there were 15 photos of her with another guy, all taken on the same day. I assume you could tell by the lighting and costume that it was all on the same day. 15 explicit photos. I know this could have been a vengeful ex leaking the photos online after they broke up, and it could have been a pretty traumatic experience for her. But every now and then, I get the nagging curiosity no more. You think you get a little curious every now and then? Like, who was that guy? Why were they posted online? Why were they taken down all these years? I was easily able to report the photos to Google and have them taken off their search engine. So my question is, should I ask her about it? Or should I just forget and never think of it again? I've never told anyone. All right. He said, keep the personal details out. What? Wait a minute. What personal details were in here?
Maybe he's just being extra careful. He's just being extra careful. That's okay.
Do you think we're vague enough to this point? Now I'm worried for our guy. I think.
No names, no locations. We're good.
No, if you've been dating for 2 years, listen up. This could be you. I don't know.
Everyone in the country that's been dating for 2 years, he's on to you.
And Australia. Big Australia crowd.
Right. And Australia. Yeah. This is not Australian. Or maybe it is. This one is tough because it's going to gnaw at you. I mean, you emailed us and you were, I think, being nice and downplaying, say, I think about it every now and then. I'm sure you think about it often. The part where you got him taken down is cool. Maybe we can get to that a little bit later. I don't know that you're ever really going to be able to ask her about this. I don't. Because it's going to be horrifying for her when you do. And you have to ask yourself, like, what explanation is going to make you feel better about this? You know, maybe it's the vengeful ex. Hey, we took photos, we were younger, whatever, not a big deal. And then he posted them. Or what if she says, yeah, like, I did this and got paid and I didn't like it. Or what if there's more? I'm not trying to freak you out here, man. So, I mean, there's one answer where it's the nasty ex, and then you're kind of the hero here where you'll feel a little bit better about it. But you have to think of, like, she's probably never going to tell you anything about this, because why would she? Like, no one's going to feel better. Like, hey, what's up? Just, you know, before we get married, I want to let you know that, you know, I had this photo shoot where, you know, I was with this guy, and it basically, you know, it's everything you would think it would be. Just wanted to get that out of the way. And then no guy would be like, that's so cool. That's interesting. Tell me. I mean, look, are there some guys that would do that? Yeah, there are. There probably are. It's not a higher number than 50%. That would, you know, you just start thinking, like, wait, what's going on? I don't know. I just don't think you could be all that judgmental, you know? I always joke that at some point we're going to have, you know, a primary where we have dick pics of, like, the 12 guys running for president hoping to get the party nomination. Hell, we're pretty close to that not that long ago. But I don't really know what you can do here. I mean, I know it's going to gnaw at you a little bit, but if this is somebody that's that important to you, this could be like a relationship-altering deal. Even though you didn't really do anything wrong, but you've got to kind of think about how she would react. Like, if this were reversed, I don't know. I think it's a little different, male, female, but if it were reversed, like, think how tough that conversation would be for you. So, I probably wouldn't bring it up, but maybe I'm wrong. I'm freely willing to admit here, I might be wrong about this, but if all the rest of the stuff, as we always kind of say, like, all the other stuff is really good here, and you got him taken down and everything else like that, and nobody else knows and all that kind of stuff, like, I don't know that I would bring it up, because that's the other thing too, is like, it's not like you're being judgmental. I wouldn't be judgmental about it. Be like, oh, okay, that's a little different. But the pictures got out where, you know, just a lot of people doing stuff where, you know, there's a good chance if you're dating somebody, you know, and you're in your 30s, there's a pretty good chance another guy has a picture of your future wife that is. Let's just say a bit revealing. All right. That there's a pretty good certainty now with technology that's something that's happened. And you
floating
can keep
around
thinking,
in Gmail.
Right. You can think about it all the time, or you can just accept that it's kind of normal now And
yeah, but the difference is it's not on the internet, though, right? Like, that picture wouldn't be on the internet. Are we sure?
Of course not.
Are we sure? See, I'm kind of surprised. Like, I don't know, Kyle, you weigh in too here, but I actually would go the other way. I would say, one, if this is going to eat at you, like it seems like it is eating at you, are you going to marry someone and have this kind of hanging over your relationship and you're going to be thinking about it for, you know, 50 plus years or something? I don't know if you're comfortable with that, then okay. But if you're not, like, just know that it's probably gonna be in the back of your mind for a while if you don't confront her about it. And also, if she doesn't know the pictures are online, shouldn't you confront her and tell her that, hey, this is a thing and I took care of it? I don't know. Like, I feel like that you would be doing her a favor by telling her. Maybe she doesn't even know that those pictures were posted.
You know what?
Yeah.
The two things you said, the first thing, I think 50 years would be a long time to not get over it. I think eventually your second part though, Surdi, you've already changed my mind. I think it could go really bad, but you're also right. If you care about this person, you're like, hey, you need to know this. I'm not judging you. I'm not asking you. Maybe this is the angle that you go with it. I'm not judging. I'm not asking, even though you are asking and you want to know who this dude is. But you need to know that this is something that I saw. You're also going to have to say, like, hey, it got a little lonely during a stretch during COVID. So, you know, whatever. She probably understands that already. I saw these pictures there of you. I had them taken down, but I want you to know that they were out there in case there's any sort of thing that you need to know about this, because, you know, this is you and I care about you. So I think, yeah, actually, Surdi, you've changed my mind about it, but it could also go really bad. Right? Would we agree on
that? Yeah, I definitely. Although I don't think you're a dick for bringing it up. I really don't. I don't think, you know, she
might think you are. Is the possibility there?
I think it's within your reason to ask a question of a picture that you saw of someone that you think you know. And I just don't think he's being a dick or wrong or mean. I think he's just asking a valid question. And he's also bringing it up because he doesn't even know if you know it's out there. So I get why she would be mad, but I don't know if it would be warranted. You know, I think it's a fair conversation for the guy to bring up. Kyle, I don't know.
I think you both made good points. On Ryan's original point, I was just thinking there's a ton of stuff that I never, ever want to go over with the person I'm with now. And I never, ever, ever want to go over it. So it could be one of those situations where you bring it up and she's like, yeah, I was never, ever going to discuss this with you. This was before we were together. And I mean, that sucks that this is on the internet, but I really don't want to talk about it with you. Or it could be like you said, it's like, hey, listen, I'm like, if you ever see some crazy shit about me on the internet, I would hope that you would tell me. So there's honestly both ways to look at this, and I'm the guy in both situations here. So same thing for you guys. If you guys ever see some crazy shit about me, you know, you can tell me.
But, so you're saying, Kyle, you have a bunch of stuff where you just sort of tuck it into your anger pouch.
My anger pouch, you said.
Yeah, like, this would clearly bother you a lot, but you wouldn't, you would go with the path of, I'm just going to stew on this for eternity or as long as I'm with this person.
No, I don't think so. That's why I agree with both of you. I'm just saying, like, if it was this girl, and like, for me, it would be more of a story than like a picture. There's not really a lot of incriminating evidence around there, but you know, if she was like, hey, did this happen when you were in college? I'd be like, what? How do you know that? And I'm super embarrassed about that. And how do you know that? Like, tell me now how you know that. So I don't know. I think it could be like, I'm just thinking if it's a similar feeling, if she's like, wait, what are you talking about?
But there's
right
a
now
huge,
that happened 8 years ago. Like, I don't know.
But there's a huge difference between like stories and someone's relationship and sexual past and something that's
posted are out there
online.
Get you. I'm just saying the facts are out there. The
you
facts
know, I'm
are
not
you were in this position
about
at some point, and I was in a certain position at some point as well, too. I don't know. That's all I'm saying.
Like, if you're dating someone, I'm not interested in talking about their past relationships or sexual endeavors. Like, that's on. I'm just not interested in it. But if it's in your face and you've seen physical, visual evidence of it, that's a different story.
That's why I'm saying you have a good point as well. I don't know. I'm not giving any advice.
I think there's two things. Surdi, I think your approach should be like, hey, I found this. I took it down, but I need you to know about it as your entree into the conversation is the best advice of anything that was given out on this topic. So Surdi wins the Spirit Award for today, even though I think it could go bad. All right. I think it could go bad, or maybe the initial part will be really bad and there'll be a cooling off of a day or 24 hours or whatever. And then you'll get to it. Maybe you'll get some of those answers and, you know, whatever. Maybe you become closer because of it. But just be careful. Like, just be careful that you may get some answers that you don't really like, and then that can change some things too. I think the other question to end the podcast is Kyle telling us, Cerruti, that he did pose nude for money at some point?
There's definitely something going on there. There's something in the ether that I'm nervous about.
Definitely not. Definitely not. And it's a story I won't ever say on Life Advice, ever, ever, ever. There's actually a couple, but there's like my friends will get drunk and they start saying it. And it's like, hey, that guy wasn't there. You're telling the story and that guy knows it now. So now like the web of people that know some of these stories have grown a couple times and like, you know, on a couple like post-college get-togethers. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. This was like a story that seven people knew. And now I'm thinking it's more like 13 over the last couple of years. So, you know, it's like one of those things. That's all I mean.
Are you sure there's no physical evidence?
I'm sure. Right, I'm 100% sure.
I'm not 100% comfortable continuing this anymore for Kyle's behalf. Like, I'm.
Yeah, no, we won't. We won't.
This is going down a road that I did
not. It won't happen. It won't happen.
My God, man. Who are you? And we're proud of you, too. We're proud of you. But it's.
Thanks.
There's. I don't know, man. You are Christmas 365, man. All right. Please subscribe to the podcast. Thank you, as always, to Honest Kyle. And Cerruti, mature Cerruti, on the podcast. We got Vilma next week. We got the guests have been awesome. Allison's been great working with us as well. So a lot of thanks to her. But we are positioned even better than we were last football season. So really thrilled for all the stuff that we have coming your way. See you Monday.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.